Welcome to Campaign Conversations with Rajon Lewis. Rajon Lewis is a husband, a father, a veteran, and a community leader. He is running for South Carolina House of Representatives in District 97. Join Rajon on the campaign trail. Rajon believes in the power of us. He believes that the people of District 97 need a champion who is willing to listen to the concerns of the people and not assume that he has all the answers. Join Team Rajon today. Follow on all social media platforms at Rajon for SC. Email the campaign today, rajonlewis4sc@gmail.com. Go to our website, rajon4sc.com, and make a contribution today. We hope you enjoy the episodes of this podcast and follow us along the campaign trail. Thank you for listening. On this week's episode of Campaign Conversations with Rajon Lewis, Rajon talks about School Choice Week. Governor McMaster declared this week School Choice Week. And this week, Rajon is talking with Emily Mayer. Emily is a wife, a mother, an educator, a community trailblazer, and an education advocate. They discuss school choice and what that means for South Carolina. In addition, this week, Governor McMaster signed legislation which sealed the congressional maps for redistricting. Rajon talks with Michelle Brandt, who has advocated for fair maps in South Carolina. Michelle Brandt is a mother, a wife, a public servant, a STEM advocate, and she's a candidate for South Carolina House District 114. We hope you enjoy today's episode and all episodes of this podcast and share with your friends.
It says an error. Let's edit that. What's going on there? Oh, you had the wrong one. Hold on. That's the one you want. No. That's the one you want. Yes, that's the one I want. It says it's fine. It's scheduled. Today, 8 o'clock. All right. Yeah, it's telling me it was an error, so I'm just trying to. It's not. Go live. All right, cool. Now we're live on all three. All right, all right, all right. We are back. Hello, everybody. How y'all doing? It's me, Rajon Lewis, your representative to be for District 97. Now, before we get started, I want you guys to go ahead and share, because that's what nice people do. Nice people share things. And so I'd like for you to share this video. Now, I don't know if you can share videos on Twitter, but on Facebook, you definitely can. So if you are watching this video from the Facebook, please go ahead and share this out and let people know that Rajon is about to start this week's campaign conversations. I'm sharing it from my Facebook page. You should too. So let's all take about 2 minutes just to share this out. We are getting started. Join me. Boom. All right. Let the world know we are about to get started. We have very good. You can retweet on Twitter. Very good. Please retweet on Twitter. This is going to be a really exciting show tonight. We got a couple of guests tonight. We got producer Jenny in the background wearing so many hats. She might have a hat rack behind her somewhere. We're going to get right to it. We got a lot to talk about tonight. Again, just having fun. So without further ado, let's count it down. Thank you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Campaign Conversations with Rajon Lewis. My name is Rajon Lewis, and I am the Democratic candidate for SC State House District 97. Now, this is Campaign Conversations. This is my opportunity to have a weekly address that I use to give the constituents of the state of South Carolina an opportunity to get to know more about me as a person, a candidate, and as your future state representative. And along the way, I also bring on some pretty cool guests. And if you would like to be a guest, I want you to please use the link that we will have put in the comment section for you guys to click on to come in. You can actually come in and ask me questions about policy, about the process, or if you just have a general voting question, come on in and let's talk about it, because voter education is one of our missions for this as well. So I want to thank you again. My name is Rajon Lewis, and I'm really excited to be here. Just by way of, and I want to start out with just giving you some campaign updates. As I mentioned last week, I've received endorsements from Minority Leader Representative Todd Rutherford from the Columbia area, Representative Crystal Matthews from District 117, who's also a candidate for the seat in Congress, Senator Tim Scott's seat, as well as a candidate for U.S. Congress, Mr. Judd Larkins, who was on last week as well. Finances, we've reached over 55 individual donors. And if you have not yet had the opportunity to donate, please go to the website, www.rajonforsc.com. That's www.rajonforsc.com, which I just put on the bottom section for you all. And so again, 55 individual donors, which is a good start, but we need a lot more to get to that goal. Just again, I spoke on a video that I did earlier this week about my opponent, my potential opponent, and how much he's been able to raise so far. And he'd already raised over $60,000 by December 31st, right? We're far behind that. And we definitely know that we're probably operating at a deficit in terms of, you know, comparatively to that individual. But we know that every dollar we use is going to be used for the good of this campaign and making sure that we get the message out of Rajon Lewis and of character, commitment, and community. So please make sure you go to my website, www.rajonforsc.com, and donate. As far as upcoming recent campaign activities, I actually spoke on January 24th with the Dorchester Dems in St. George. Actually, I did it virtually, but the group is out of St. George. And then on January 25th, I spoke at the Collin County Democratic Party, which is located in Walterboro. And again, I spoke there virtually as well. And today I had an interview with the great, the legendary Mr. Geno Jones of Magic 99.7. He has that long running show on there. I actually was on his YouTube channel. I did a live video with him on his YouTube channel. So you can go to his YouTube channel and check out the interview that I did with him, where we had a pretty good discussion about sports, as well as, you know, where I stand on my political issues, my platform. So if you're interested, check that out after you finish watching this, because we want to make sure you watch this whole thing. Upcoming activities, events. On February 5th, I'll be interviewed by Mr. Quentin Washington of Quentin's Close-Ups. On February 9th, I'll be speaking at the Owls Whilst Club meeting, which I believe is in West Ashley. February 12th, I'll be speaking virtually to the gentleman of Phi Beta Sigma. And then on February 19th, I'll be speaking at a candidate breakfast in Cottageville, within District 97. And then on February 26th, I'll be attending the Collin County Democratic Party Blue Bash in Walterboro. So if you want to meet me in person, that's a great way to come out, meet me, shake my hand, and ask me some questions that you've wanted to know. And if you have an event that you'd like me to come to and take part in, please go to my website and you can contact me there, or you can just email me at RajonLewis4SC@gmail.com. RajonLewis4SC@gmail.com. See, that's the problem with having 7 email addresses, is that you never remember which one to use at which time. Jenny, I see you laughing at me. Stop it. But today's topics, we're going to run through some topics today. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time because, like I said, I have guests this week. And I'm really excited about you getting to, we're going to have some substantive discussions about some things that are happening at the State House and, you know, my thoughts on it. But, you know, one thing that I've been able to do, I've been able to talk a lot about you know, who I am and develop that background in the character and the things that made me want to run. But the thing I haven't actually told you yet are my platform issues. And I wanted to introduce them very, very lightly. I'm not going to go in depth with any of them. But I just want you to know the things that I care about and the things that I'll be advocating for while on the campaign trail and the things that I will fight for once I enter the state house. So if I had thought about it, I would have a banner here. Jenny, I got to make sure I put a banner here for when I'm talking about platform issues. Just future for me. All right. Okay. So platform issue number one, education and workforce development. I'm a teacher. I'm always gonna be a teacher at heart. You know, once you're a teacher, you're always a teacher. And with that being the case, I will always advocate for the needs of children in schools. I think that good quality, sound education is definitely something that's needed. And I think that we have to do everything we can to give schools the things they need to succeed. Now, I want to make sure that anytime I speak about education, that is clearly understood that at no point do I put the blame on what's happening in schools on the teachers. You do not go into education because all students should fail. You don't want to see students fail. You want to see students succeed. Administrators, teachers, every person from the lunch ladies to the gym teacher to the guidance counselors, every person in that building, I believe, wants to see these students succeed. I believe that. But what's not happening is schools don't have the resources that they need to be maximally effective. So as your District 97 representative, I will advocate for the needs of teachers. I will advocate for schools getting the resources that they need to be successful. I see that happening in three ways. One, raise teacher salaries in the state of South Carolina to be competitive with top states. Two, reduce classroom sizes. And three, make sure that there are qualified mental health counselors in every single school. I also add into that workforce development, which really goes beyond just inside the school, but making sure that there are connections between these places that do skills training for trades and even nonprofits that work in mentorship that are helping to build well-rounded young people that will supplement what's happening in the schools. Now, of course, again, we can talk more about what that looks like later on. Secondly, an issue that I care greatly about is infrastructure. Infrastructure, especially in District 97, where it's mostly rural, everybody's talking about it, but not enough has been done about it. Broadband. We've got to make broadband throughout District 97 and the state of South Carolina, especially the rural areas. Why? That improves economic opportunities, that improves educational opportunities, and that just gives people a better quality of life, having broadband in these areas. It's no longer something that's a luxury, it's something that's a necessity, and we should have it throughout District 97 and the state of South Carolina. Improving roads. Our roads, you've driven on the roads. You've driven on the roads where, you know, you have to drive on one part of it because the other part you're the whole way through. That's a problem. We got to fix these roads, and we can't just hope that another pandemic will come, so they'll give us extra money to do it. That's something we can build into our state plan. I want to do that. Water systems. We got to make sure that we're looking at reviewing the water system, seeing what's happening about these pipes that still exist in cities that are creating lead in water and having some of the worst drinking water in the country. I know everybody wants to talk about Flint, Michigan, but Denmark still has a big time water issue in the state of South Carolina. That's something that impacts people of District 97 as well. So infrastructure is my second big issue. My third platform issue that I'm going to talk about tonight, and the final one that I'm going to talk about tonight, is healthcare access, right? Now, we're talking about healthcare access. Everybody talks about health insurance, and it's very important that we talk about health insurance. I believe that we should expand healthcare. I'm not, as I've said in previous videos, I'm not a Medicare for all kind of guy. I think that people should have the right to choose their healthcare if they can afford a different level of healthcare. But I think everybody should have some kind of healthcare. We should not live in the greatest country in the world, one of the richest countries in the world, and not have citizens that can't walk into a hospital and be seen without being charged an arm and a leg. In addition to that, in terms of healthcare, I'm talking about building more hospitals. It takes too long in rural areas like District 97 to get to a hospital, especially in areas where it's heavily filled with elderly people, many of which do not drive and need to get to a healthcare facility very, very quickly. So I'll stop there with my platform issues, but again, those three key areas for me: education and workforce development, infrastructure, and healthcare access. And we're actually going to be able to talk a little bit more about one of those key topics tonight with my special guest, Ms. Emily Mayer. We'll be talking about, if we're looking at those three areas that I talked about, education, workforce development, and infrastructure and healthcare access, this falls under education. This week, Senator Tim Scott was actually on a forum talking about school choice and how he felt about school choice. And this is something that Ms. Emily Mayer, who is a mother, a wife, an educator, a community trailblazer, an education advocate, is very passionate about. So without further ado, I'm going to bring her on, Ms. Emily Mayer. Be the candidate.
How you doing?
Hey, Emily, how's it going?
Good.
Thank you so much for joining me. I'm really excited about you being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled. I love talking about education, so bring it on.
That's a beautiful thing. Please introduce yourself to the audience for those who don't know you.
I'm Emily Mayer. I am a special education teacher by training. I also have a master's degree in education policy. Live down in Beaufort, South Carolina, down in the Low Country, all the way down in Bluffton. I teach middle school autism, but I'm currently on maternity leave to take care of my brand new 1-month-old baby. So while I'm not teaching, I'm doing everything I can to advocate for students in schools.
Nice. So what got you? So I know as an educator, what made you want to go into the advocacy realm?
I think as a teacher, you get a unique lens into the inner workings of where the issues really lie, right? As a parent or as a community member stakeholder, you kind of have an idea, but it's not until you get into the walls of the schools that you can really pinpoint which areas need to be addressed in order to fill some of the holes that we're seeing. I think it's very easy for people not in the education world to kind of slap a Band-Aid on things and hope that fixes it. But as a teacher, especially as a teacher for students with special needs, I can see how those areas really impact my students. Yes. And I need to be able to speak for them if they can't do it for themselves.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for saying that. As a former educator myself, that was something that really always annoyed me. Excuse me. And it didn't really hit me how unlistened to teachers were until I went to Washington, D.C. in 2014, where I actually had the opportunity to do a brown bag lunch with then Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan. And we talked about the fact that the reason we're like, you know, why aren't teachers listened to by legislators? And then he actually told me one of the points they made was that by profession, teachers are one of the lowest voting professions out of all of them. And because teachers don't vote, and that's not a respected voting block, teachers are often left out of these discussions. And these people make decisions about schools and about education without knowing anything about it. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I agree 100%. I would also add to Secretary Duncan's point that teachers often vote against their best interests. When we go to the voting booth, many people are a one platform voter, right? Whether it's gun control or healthcare or any of those things that we hear about in the news on a regular basis. And educators go there also as a regular person like you and I with those things in the forefront of their mind, not realizing how these decisions impact their job, impact their students, impact their families. So oftentimes they go in thinking about other issues and then later on realize, oh, well, if I had voted with my career in the forefront of my mind, maybe things would be a little bit different.
Absolutely. Thank you for saying that. So well said and just on point. Thank you so much. So let's talk about school choice, right? So school choice is something, was school choice day or something like that? I don't even know.
School choice week, Governor McMaster.
Shout out to Governor McMaster for making it School Choice Week, which apparently is a brand new thing that educators knew nothing about until this year. But first of all, what are your thoughts about school choice?
So this is a really loaded question for me, because before I started my degree on education policy, I would have told you that I was completely anti-choice. School choice is a non-starter for me. I will not have a conversation about school choice. It's inequitable. It leaves behind students with disabilities. I still feel partially that way, but in having conversations with other educators across the country, which I was able to do because it was an online program, I was able to meet with teachers from Memphis, from New York City, from LA. So I got a really good wide view on where school choice is effective and where we can make it better. Mm-hmm. And school choice can be done in a way that is equitable, in a way that is fair, and in a way that is non-polarizing. The problem is we have not done that as a nation, as a state, as a community. My school district that I work in is a choice district. So by that, students can apply to any of the schools within our school district for specific programs that those schools have, be it arts, STEM, woodwork, any of those kind of niche areas. That is a way to make public school choice an equitable option. What is not an equitable option, which is what Governor McMaster is offering, is to take money from public schools and move them into private charter school areas where people are already paying tuition. Why are we taking public taxpayer funds and moving it to places that people are already paying money? And what type of people can typically pay for private school? Affluent people who don't need to be taking taxpayer money, right?
Right.
So the biggest issue that I have with the way that school choice is being handled right now is that the schools that we're discussing for school choice can legally exclude a large option and population of students. Yeah. My students with special needs do not need to be included in a private or charter school. They have every right to exclude them. So if we want to talk about equity in school choice, I'm happy to have those conversations with Governor McMaster. But until we discuss equity, it's a non-starter for me.
I love that. I love everything you just said. Everything you just said was dead on about it. I much like you, and it might just be the teacher in me, but I think it's more the North Charleston in me. I've seen what they've done to the schools in North Charleston with school choice. And what they've done is deplete the public schools. They've devalued the public schools because a lot of these schools that pop up, and I'm not talking about like a, you know, military magnet, which is still under Charleston's County School District, or even academic magnet, or, you know, these magnet schools. I'm talking more about the schools that are public-private partnerships or just outright charter schools. I'm outright, not magnet schools, charter schools. When I'm talking about those types of schools, they don't have the same kinds of requirements as the public schools do. So you take the kids out of public schools with these requirements. You take the top kids, the kids that you want, out of these schools. And now they're sending them to schools that they don't have those requirements. And if the kid doesn't fit in and doesn't work there, guess what you do? You send them back to the public schools. So now what does that do? That takes the public school numbers and it drops them and drops them and drops them. It drops the quality of the school down. And then they say, why aren't the teachers teaching better? Why aren't the administrators doing more?
Because why aren't the test scores higher?
Why aren't the test scores higher? Because you took the kids that would have thrived in those schools, and you moved them to charter schools. You put them in Academic Magnet. Academic Magnet is the number one school in high school in the country. It's less than a mile from North Charleston High School, which is one of the lowest schools in the country. Do you think that's by accident? It's not by accident that these things happen. And then if you look at the demographics of those schools, if you want to talk about segregation through education, just look at the demographics of the schools. It's right there in front of us, and that's my problem. Also, second point to what your point about the school scholarships, what do you call them? Educational scholarships, he called them. If they want to go to private school, they should pay for private school. Period. My oldest daughter graduated from Pinewood Prep. I paid for that education. When I removed my daughter from public school, when she left Somerville High School and went to Pinewood Prep, I paid for that education. I couldn't take the money that the school, the district was giving, the state was giving the school for having my daughter and say, no, let's move that over to a private school. No. Private schools exist for a reason. Private schools also, again, don't follow the same rules as public schools. So we can't put them on a unlevel playing field and then give them the resources that will further create that gap, unless the goal is from the beginning to kill our public school system.
That is definitely the goal. And I think the big word that you didn't use there when talking about sending your daughter to a private school is that was your choice, right? Let's go back to that choice word that Governor McMaster has coined for this week. It was your choice as a parent to remove your child from public school and place her into private school. So therefore, it was your choice to take on the financial obligation that that brought you, right? There have been multiple lawsuits that have gone to the Supreme Court revolving school vouchers. So it's not the first time that Governor McMaster has been taken to court. Unfortunately, it will not be the last time that Governor McMaster is taken to court, wasting more taxpayer dollars, but that's just where we're heading.
So what's the way forward on this? Because I know you've been doing the research in terms of the bills and everything that are out there to sort of push this further. Where are we now and where is it going?
So it's hard to say where we are right now because our state legislature is trying to move this process behind closed doors. They had a committee meeting today revolving the educational scholarship accounts, I think they're called, ESAs. And that was neither live streamed nor were public comments accepted. So they're very clearly aware that this is a topic that the public does not find popular. They do not seem to care, and they're just going to keep moving along with their agenda as it is. So it's super important to be following organizations like Palmetto State Teachers Association, the SCEA, and South Carolina for Education on social media, because they've been pushing out kind of actionable steps that we can take as constituents to kind of put some pressure onto some elected officials who might care about what we have to say. And secondly, they have been providing updates along the way that our legislature is not giving us. So I believe today that the SCEA was able to live stream the committee hearing that was taking place. So it was a little more transparent to the public.
Nice. Thank you so much for sharing that. Let me ask you this, as a teacher who is in advocacy, have you experienced any pushback on the fact that you do, you are so adamant about your desires and the things that you're following in advocacy for education?
I walk a very, very tight line. I try to make sure that everything that I do is walking with respect and walking with the message in mind, right? As much as my emotions might take myself into control sometimes, I have to try to separate that as much as possible because that's not going to get anything done. So I try to be very intentional with my messaging and with my attitude and approach towards things to try to keep walking that fine line. I try to give praise wherever praise is due. During COVID, the last thing I would ever want to be is a Board of Education member or a superintendent. So I try to give credit as much as possible where I can in those regards. And I think that that goes a long way. But it certainly is challenging. I mean, we're in a non-protected right to work state. Coming from New Jersey previously, where we did not, you know, we were more protected in our jobs.
The union state.
Right, exactly. We had collective bargaining power. We had job security. We had tenure. If we had an issue, we could go to our union and they would go to bat for us. That was never our necks on the line. That's been the biggest adjustment since moving down here, and making sure that I'm advocating and I'm doing so appropriately and respectfully. I'm not putting my job on the line. I'm not putting myself in a situation where my board would like to remove me in any way. You know, thankfully, maybe the teacher shortage kind of gives me a little bit more job security. I'm just grateful to have the support of my community. My family, my friends, I know that they know that I'm doing the right thing in this advocacy. And if that ends up making me have to leave the classroom in one way, shape, or form, you know, advocacy and education kind of go hand in hand. You do both things. Difference in the world and in the community. But ultimately making an impact that's going to benefit my students is the end goal, no matter how I have to get that done.
Absolutely. Thank you. You are on fire, Emily. You are good with me. You are good with me. We have a question in the comment section. It says, what's best for students? How do we help them excel, make them competitive candidates for higher education? It's a great question. I'll let you start and then
That's a great question. We need to meet students where they're at. Part of the problem that we're facing currently is that we're trying to play catch up because of all this quote unquote learning loss that took place during COVID. But I'm going to be very, very frank with you. South Carolina's education rating was abysmal before COVID. We were still not meeting students where they needed us to meet them. Whether that is adjusting our expectations on assignments, whether that is, you know, giving, instead of a standardized assessment, a hands-on project. Not every student is there to bubble in answers on a test. I was an awful, awful test taker, and I consider myself to be an extremely well-educated and smart individual. Yeah. So we just need to work on meeting students where they're at, and that's easier said than done when all of this red tape regarding EOCs, standardized testing, Common Core standards gets in the way.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would agree right there with meeting students where they're at. I think as while I was in the classroom, the thing that I found is the kids that, even if a kid struggled, if a kid genuinely thought that I was doing everything I could to help them, they fought hard for me. And that's where it starts. It starts with knowing that these people in this school care about me. I think that's where we lose a lot of our kids. Apathy is heavy in our community. And I think that we've removed a lot of the tools. We've removed the village in a lot of cases. In that village, you know, if you think about it, again, being from North Charleston, I always use my North Charleston card. But I remember, you know, my community raised me, you know, not just the school. We can't just require like that the school be the place where kids learn. Kids learn at home. Kids learn in their neighborhoods. Kids learn in their churches. Kids learn in the grocery store. Kids are learning all around us. And as an educator, one thing that I did is I tried to find a way to make all these things, these new processes, these new concepts relevant to the life that they live. And a lot of times we try to teach kids in a way that's really boxed, but they have something called differentiated instruction where you find where that kid is and you meet that kid right there. So I love that you said that. I think the second thing that we could do to help people excel, just back to that village idea, is put things back in the community that will assist these kids outside of school. They need mentoring programs involved in these schools, not a program that the school tries to put together and have somebody come in to teach them how to tie ties. No, actual integrated nonprofit organizations that come in and provide these services on a weekly basis. They're there. The kids, they know they have somebody consistent. Let's put playgrounds back in neighborhoods. Why don't we have playgrounds in neighborhoods where kids can go around and just swing on the monkey bars? My kids have never been on a pair of monkey bars outside of their school. That's crazy. Put basketball courts back in neighborhoods. That's something that'll help kids. Like, all these are things that they took out of neighborhoods when they decided that development was more important than developing people. And all of these things have went on. Free lunch. I know it's a government program and people don't like the idea of government programs, but free lunch during the summer, that kept me out of so much trouble as a kid. Now imagine, all summer long, I'm not eating consistently. I don't got nowhere to play. I'm not reading. I'm not involved in community activities. And now I come back. You know what happens? Summer slide. Now you have to catch you the first quarter of school catching me up on the stuff that I learned last year. These are all things that contribute. In addition to that, I have issues at home. Issues that I need to talk to somebody about. But I can't talk to a school counselor because the school counselor that we have for the district is tasked out to five other schools, if we have one at all. We have to make sure that these kids who are dealing with these traumas at home aren't waiting for the guidance counselor. Because the guidance counselor, this is something I think I said last time, the guidance counselor's job is not to help kids in troubling situations. It's to get them to college. It's to prepare them for the workforce. That's a guidance counselor's actual job.
I would say too, I think we lose sight of the fact that it's our job to get our students ready to join the community and be participating members of our society, right? I don't care what your test score was. I don't care if you read on a third grade level and you're 15 years old, right? I care that you can go out into the community and make an impact, whether that's working in the grocery store and keeping the shelves stocked, whether that's as a pastor, a faith leader in some way, shape, or form. Shoot, if you can go into your community and make a difference, then I did my job as a teacher.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what it's all about. It's helping these young people identify what success is for them. And once they can identify what success is personally for them, they will excel. They will succeed because You're not pushing them to a goal that you set for them. You're pushing them to a goal that they set for them. And when they set their goals, they're going to work harder for them. But if you tell every kid, you have to go to college or you're a failure, which is not the truth. Like, we have to restructure so much of this. I was in a, so this week is the National Mentor Summit is going on. And I know we got to move on, but this is so good. This week, this month is National Mentoring Month in the United States. And this week is the National Mentor Summit that we're doing virtually. And they had a discussion today talking about building relationships in schools. And I remember when I was in, I taught fifth grade, I would always tell my students, listen, I got you all day, right? And because I have you all day, I have the opportunity to learn all about you. And I can, you know, when you're having a rough day, I can slow things down, or I can teach you something about social studies during math or vice versa because you missed that and we can just make up the time. When you get to middle school, when you get to high school, they have much more kids. So they don't have time to care about you. That's the sad reality of this world we live in. So now we have high school teacher, which has roughly, what, an hour to hour and 15 minutes tops to teach this lesson to 30 to 35 kids in this classroom because classrooms are crowded. When Timmy comes in and Timmy has a bad day, Miss Smith can't stop and say, hey, let's come on, Timmy, let's go outside and talk about it. How's your mom doing? No, Miss Smith has to teach this lesson. We got to completely look at the structure and the way that we're doing these things. We can't ask teachers to build relationships in a system that doesn't allow for relationship building.
Students are going to rise to the level in which they feel cared about, right? So some of the most impactful teachers that I still remember to this day are not the classes that I learned the most in. They're the classes where I felt the most cared about, the most respected, that I felt like I was able to explore who I was. And we lose that along the way. And I feel like that's where students become disconnected in their education process. And once they're disconnected and they don't want to be there, forget it. It's done.
Right, right. And that's where the apathy kicks in. Now I'm hopeless. Now I'm just there every day and I'm going to make your life miserable because y'all forced me to be in this place that I never wanted to come to in the first place, where nobody appreciates me, nobody respects me, and nobody thinks I can accomplish anything. Thank you so much, Emily. This has been an amazing conversation. I hope we talk again. I'd love to meet with you for lunch or coffee or anything like that. But I hope you come back on. I do these weekly. So as education issues come up, or if you want to give us an update on what's happening with the school choice stuff, please like count us, come back. I'd love to talk to you again.
You got it.
Any parting thoughts?
I just love that education's at the forefront of your platform. I think that that's so important. I think we often forget that the people that we elect probably haven't been in a public school in 20, 30, 40 years. And they're making, they're making decisions about our public education system. So it's important to keep education on the forefront, to keep these conversations going, to make sure that we're heard, to make sure that educators vote with their best interests in mind, in order to really make that difference. Because unless you're in the schools every day, you don't really know what's going on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Emily. I appreciate you. If somebody wants to follow you on social media or something, do you do that? Or do you just like,
oh yeah, absolutely. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram, Emily Mayer SC. I don't have a fancy Facebook, but if you want to just regularly friend request me on Facebook, it's just my regular name as well.
Well, I got a feeling your Facebook's about to blow up a lot more because you are on fire. I love it. I love your energy and keep being who you are. I love it.
Thank you. Best of luck to you.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. That was Emily Mayer. She was great. She was on fire, right? Education, active advocate. She's out here. She apparently is a Clyburn fellow. She's apparently done the Emerge program. So maybe she has some politics in her future just based on what we were just talking about. And she's a new mom. She is, what else? Alicia Keys would say that girl is on fire. And I love hearing it. So that's what's up. So other big news that happened this week is that the gerrymandered congressional maps were passed and signed into law. That's really interesting. If you haven't been following what's been going on, there's been a lot of discussion about these state maps. We've mentioned in our previous campaign conversations about how just based on the new maps that they have in the state house, I'm running in this special election in one set of maps, and then the November election would have a whole different set of maps. That's because of what's happening with maps. All right. for those who don't know, there's a term called gerrymandering, and we're going to talk a little bit about it in a second. I don't want to take off too much, take too much of that time. But our elected officials have already passed a gerrymandered map for South Carolina House and Senate. And I want to introduce you to someone who's testified on these maps and who has felt the impact of redistricting. Help me welcome District 114, SC House District 114 candidate, mother, wife, and public servant STEM advocate, Miss Michelle Brandt. I finally get to meet you.
Hello. Thank you for having me on your show.
I am excited about you being here. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Word, word, word. So please, for those who don't know you, please introduce yourself to the audience.
My name is Michelle Brandt, and I'm candidate for State House District 114. That is West Ashley and part of Dorchester County. And as Rayshawn mentioned, I am a mom of two. I have a four-year-old and a six-year-old. I am commissioner of Charleston County Parks and Recreation Commission. And I am the daughter of a lieutenant colonel retired. So I come from a legacy of service, and I want to bring my my optimism and my vigor and my drive to the State House, because I believe that better decisions are made when you have different perspectives at the table. And I know that I will bring a fresh perspective to the State House. So,
absolutely. Absolutely. And again, thank you so much for joining me. This is a conversation that's been a long time in the making. I forgot where I first saw you. I think it was on Twitter. You were like tweeting about some stuff, and I was like, oh, she seems dope. And I was like, oh, she's running. So I was really excited about the fact that you were running and that you put your hat in the race. But the thing that really has stuck out and that you've really been in the forefront for recently is this redistricting. Can you talk a little bit about what made you passionate about it and, you know, what you've been doing in terms of that?
Well, I just looked at the map that they drew, and I was just like, what is this? They put most of the city of Charleston in Clyburn's district, which is not ours, not a part of, you know, the coastal region. And it made no sense other than that it was gerrymandered on the basis of race, which is unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to speak out about it because it's wrong. And so that's basically how I got involved. And I gave testimony at the Senate committee hearing where my son Zoom bombed me and gave, you know, his glorious appearance. But I was happy to share that moment with my children so they can look back when they're much older from now and see like how this matters and how to make a difference and how you speak up. But I don't think those maps are going to hold up. They're going to go to court, and God willing, they will be shot down and they'll have to try again. So we need fair maps.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And for those who are listening and saying, hey, what is gerrymandering? Because we do have to realize that some people don't have, you know, a lot of voter information. I want to make sure that I do give that definition. It says gerrymandering is to manipulate the boundaries of an electoral constituency so as to favor one party or class. And just to put that in regular terms, it's when you take a district and you cut it up in ways where you can assure success for one party. And if you look at what's happened in the state of South Carolina, we currently have a Republican run House, Senate, and governorship, right? The House and Senate are both broken up into district maps. And when she's talking about she's talking about Senator Clyburn, Senator Clyburn is District 6, correct?
Yes.
Correct. So Senator Clyburn is, so when you talk about U.S. Congress, Senator Clyburn is District 6. Now that area covers a very distinct area. They just approved a map that cuts that puts areas of Charleston in the same district as areas in Columbia.
Yes.
That's what they just did.
Yes.
That's what they just did.
It doesn't make any sense at all. And yeah. traditionally we haven't been a part of like that Midland region. Like we stay a whole county for the most part. We're the coastal region. We're Congressional District 1. That's how it should be.
Yeah.
But it's clearly been drawn to cut out all the Black communities out of Congressional District 1 to give the Republican candidate for Congress a better chance to win, unfortunately, which is not fair. It's not competitive at all.
Yeah. And so if you look at Again, looking at Senator Clyburn, Whip Clyburn's
Representative district.
Representative Clyburn. I think Whip Clyburn. When I spoke to him, he was Whip Clyburn, and like I'm trying to get all the nomenclature together. It's a lot out here, but when you look at that, they were talking about the maps, and the critics of the map say that it literally gives Republicans a 5-1, like pretty much guarantee it will always be 5-1 in terms of state, in terms of state Senate elections. And it makes it almost impossible for somebody from a different party to win that election. So it makes it very hard for a Democrat to win in one of those five districts that are really been skewed towards Republicans. Also, if you look at the way they've pushed those maps through, it was not done in a fair and equitable way. I remember last year, they were going around and doing those hearings where people were going up to the microphone and saying, these are what we want, and this is what we want. And they went back to Columbia and created a map that did not factor in any of the will of those people. Now, if you do a little bit of research, you can find out where this map came from. And then you can find out that the people who voted for it without any amendments. Without any amendments, despite appeals from the minority party. Now, if one party has the ability to write their own maps to make sure that their party stays in power, how is that legal? Like, how is that possible?
It's not legal. It's not right. I mean, they draw those maps on the basis of race. They take the census data and they use that to choose. And more than likely, Black communities are going to typically vote Democrat. Not always, but that's the trend. So they do that in a way to cut all of them out to give their candidates a higher chance of winning, which doesn't make it really competitive at all. And, we don't have to agree on everything, but let's have a fair competitive election. Because then what you have, if you have these gerrymandered maps, you have one party having the election being decided in the primary, essentially. And you could have more and more extreme candidates running, and that's dangerous because they won't represent the needs and the beliefs of everyone, only just a very small few people.
Well, so I'll even give you an example of how gerrymandering can affect an election, right? So District 97 that I'm running in a special election on May 17th, make sure you come out to the polls and vote and donate and all that great stuff. District 97, they just approved the new maps on District 97. When it was announced that there would be a special election for this, people told me, do not run. There's no way you can win that. It is set up for Republicans to win. How do you know? Because they took the old map that had St. George and had a larger swath of Somerville, and it had Ridgeville. They cut all of it out. They cut out a part of Somerville. They cut out the part of Berkeley County. They cut out St. George, and they cut out the area, and they gave us more of Collin County, which skews dark red. So they're pretty much trying to assure that a Republican will always win that seat. That is something that again, if you have a majority Republican Senate, House, and governorship, you can push things through without one Democratic vote. That's a problem.
It is. And that's why we need people to speak out. We need people to run like yourself, like me. And we need to support each other if we want to make this state run more smoothly, with intelligence and fairly, if we want things to get better.
And so there's this term called, in gerrymandering, called crack and pack, where they crack the counties like they did Charleston, and then they pack the district that they want the minorities in. So if you look at Representative Clyburn's hold on Senate District 6, Representative District Clyburn's hold on District 6, people would say it's largely representative of the fact that they pushed all the Black people into District 6, and they minimized the ability of minorities to have an impact, or Democrats to have an impact, on areas outside of District 6. It's cracking and packing.
The map that they approved doesn't have any whole counties in it and actually has parts of six, which is ridiculous. And the goal of redistricting should always be to keep counties as whole as possible and to keep communities together as much as you possibly can. But they clearly did not do that. They had an attorney gave his testimony. I think his name was Joseph Opperman. And he said, like, there's no other explanation for you to draw the map this way other than on the on some racial policy, I believe what was quoted in the Post and Courier. So I really don't see how they have any legal leg to stand on with the way the maps are currently.
Absolutely. And I want to give a special shout out to Senator Marlon Kempson. I watched his testimony about the maps and what was going on. And I just wanted to just thank him for the zeal with which, you know, he went after it and the attempts that they're making. But I want to ask the state of South Carolina one question, right? Because we really seem to be happy about having one party control all these seats and having controlling all these spaces. But let's ask ourselves a question. We're bottom in every area that counts in this nation. We're at the bottom in every area that counts. Think about it. And we're on top in all the areas that we don't want to be in the top in. Mm-hmm. If we've had a Republican governor, a Republican-controlled Senate, and a Republican-controlled Congress, and then at the national level had Republicans in the vast majority of our legislative seats for all these years, what does it benefit us to have one party controlling our entire state? Even if it's the party that you like. Maybe you're a lifelong Republican, but you got to be looking at this and saying, this is all I got?
Yeah, I read an article. This is all we get. There was an article in ABC 4 News that said that South Carolina, and specifically, you know, the Charleston area, but South Carolina is among one of the worst states to live, to raise a family, because of the lack of affordability and education. I know those are two things. Well, housing affordability is what I'm passionate about. I know that you're passionate about education. I watched your segment with Emily. And it's like unfortunate, and like what you said, we've had Republican-controlled chambers for a very long time. So I think that's called insanity when you do the same thing over and over again.
Over and over again.
Yes. Different results. Yes. And so, you know, that's why we need a new generation of change makers to run for office and to bring fresh ideas and takes to the state house.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think if nothing else, you're it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I think you're it. So the feeling's mutual. But I think that it's important that I try to make sure that I'm not speaking in a way that accuses a specific party of ruining anything. Because I think there's so much of that that happens in our country that really doesn't allow us to have substantive discussions about things that really matter. We got to look at the fact that these things are happening right in front of our face and they're not going to change as long as we keep doing what we've always done. Listen to people when they talk about these issues. I don't care if you've never liked Black people. If a Black person is standing in front of you and they're standing, they're fighting for things that impact you in a negative way, give that person a chance. Hear them. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you've never liked white people. If that white person is telling you, hey, I want to fight for things that's going to impact you in a positive way, listen to them. If they're a Republican, listen to them. If they're a Democrat, listen to them. Libertarian, listen to them. Don't vote for me because I'm a Democrat. If you think I'm a Democrat with bad ideas, I can live with that. But you won't think I have bad ideas if you're actually listening with your interests. Emily spoke earlier about people who are one issue voters. We cannot afford in this era to be a one issue voter. I don't care what that one issue is or how serious you are about it. Look at things in a totality. Look at what's happening in your communities. Don't talk to me right now, Siri.
Yes, I agree. We need people to be more holistic in voting and look at the bigger picture. I don't think it's always best practice to just focus, zoom in on one issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned, you know, not wanting to go in on Republicans, but I mean, we also need to call a spade at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But the way I do it in a way that gives that person that and I don't put it on their party. I put it on that person being that. And that person being that, regardless of their party, if that's what they're doing, they need to be out of that seat. Period.
Yes, and you're right. I mean, we should judge people on how they vote and their actions.
Yeah, for sure.
Instead
for
of just blindly following any party.
Right. And I know you mentioned affordable housing. I would love for you to talk a little bit more about your platform on affordable housing.
Well, you know, I'm personally affected by this. You know, with the pandemic, housing prices have gone up like crazy. And that has severely affected the wage gap. Dorchester County has the highest wage gap in the state of South Carolina at $10. Mm. Charleston is right behind at $7 wage gap. It is so hard for families, working families, to live near where they work. So that affects a bunch of things. It affects traffic. It harms our environment with all the air pollution and toxins from having to commute for such a long way. So housing is one of those kind of holistic issues that touches everything. And I think that we need to work on more housing affordability plans in our state. And I know that we have Marvin Pendarvis and Deon Tedder are doing some amazing things in the State House now with trying to create incentives for more affordable housing, which is amazing. Yeah. And I hope to get elected and get up there and help them. We need more. Yeah. So
absolutely. Yeah. Again, your interest, right? If what Michelle is talking about in terms of affordable housing, if that's something that speaks to you, that's an issue that you should be concerned about and finding out more about Michelle and how you can support her campaign. So thank you so much for saying that. I'm running short on time. So if let them know how they can find you, how can they support you?
Of course. You can look me up on my website at www.michelleforsc.com. I am on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at michelleforsc.
And TikTok.
I'm on TikTok. I didn't make that the same as all my other handles because I was a little like, what are people going to think? But, you know, I'm pretty goofy, pretty charismatic. So you can find me on TikTok at MichelleB414. On TikTok.
All right. Nice. Nice. Thank you so much, Michelle. I look forward to speaking with you again in the future. I know if there's ever anything I can do to help or support you or show up for you. I definitely want to do that because we need people like you on the wall. We need people like you advocating for what needs to happen in the State House. So I look forward to serving with you when we get to the State House of Representatives. We'll be freshmen together, hopefully.
Yes. I wish you the best of luck, and thank you again for having me on today.
Thank you so much, Michelle. I appreciate you. Thank you. All right. So that was Michelle Brandt. She was also amazing. We've had an amazing conversation tonight about so many things regarding what's going on in the State House, what's going on in the state of South Carolina, how to be better advocates. We talked about specific issues. I unveiled my platform, a part of my platform, upcoming events. Like, we've done so many things. Just as a point of reference, I always like to end just making sure that you all know how to find my site. If you will go to www.rajanforsc.com, you can go to my site. This is it right here. This is how it looks. Not only can you go to my site and find out about me, but you can find out why I'm running. You can also find out about voting. And this is very key, right? This is very key because we'd be remiss if we went through all of this, especially in an era where we're talking about things like voting rights and making sure that people have an opportunity to make their voices heard and not talk about, you know, one, making sure that you register to vote. I know a lot of my younger people are, you know, this turn 18 or you're about to turn 18, make sure you go and register to vote. You need to register to vote. If you want to vote in my election, if you live in District 97 and you want to vote in a special election, you need to vote. You need to be registered by April 17th. Also, you need to check your voter registration information. With that, you can confirm your district and make sure you know your voting location. Maybe you're like, I don't know if I live in District 97. If you check your voter registration, it will tell you what district you vote in, and it'll tell you what district you what your voting precinct is, so your voting location. All right, because there's certain times and certain places you can't go to certain places to vote for certain elections. All right, so that's the long and short of it. Absentee voting. If you live out of state, right? If you live out of state, but you're still a South Carolina resident and you still vote in state, learn about absentee voting. Come right here. You can request an absentee ballot here for both Caledon County and Dorchester County. And here's information about voting in person. And of course, if what something you heard tonight made your soul want to spend some money on our campaign, please go to, where's it at? Uh-oh, sorry. Dang, I had it all queued up and I messed it up. Let me fix it. You can go in my website, you just go to give, and then it'll send you to my @blue where you can make a donation. Just, you know, as a personal plea, you can make a donation of any kind. But again, like I told you guys last time, and I said on a personal video on Wednesday, on Tuesday, these elections are won and lost on money. When we talk about corruption, a lot of times these people are corrupt because the people who are paying for these elections have bought their interests. I'm new enough and nobody knows me yet. So you have an opportunity to raise up a grassroots candidate that only represents you, that is only beholden to you. There's no corporate money behind me. There's no super PACs behind me. There's no PACs behind me. The only people behind me are you, the people of South Carolina and beyond. And I would even go beyond myself to other candidates like myself. When you see these big giant signs, those big giant signs are bought with campaign funds. Those campaign funds come from people like you. And maybe you can't make a $1,000 donation, which is the max for this. But if you can sign up to give $10 a month, that goes a long way in a grassroots campaign that helps me buy signs, that helps me get flyers, that helps me canvas, that helps me pay staff, that helps me to spread the message that will put me, a person like me, in this seat to represent you. We can't say nobody's out here representing us when the people try and we don't support them. So I hope that the message that I've given every time we've spoken, and every time I've spoken since you've heard my name, has advocated for the fact that I'm a candidate that deserves your trust. I'm a candidate that deserves your support. And I'm a candidate that on May 17th, you should vote to become the next representative for State House District 97. We'll be doing this again next week. We do it once a week on Thursdays, sometimes at 1 to make sure the people who are on early have an opportunity to watch, and sometimes at 8. My producer hasn't told me what time we're doing it next week yet, but there will be an announcement made very soon. I thank you all for your time. I thank you for your energy. And 1,000-yard signs is not a lot, y'all. So, hold on, let me back up. For us to buy 1,000-yard signs, we need to raise $3,500 alone. That's 1,000-yard signs, all right? That's 1,000-yard signs. We need $3,500 just to get that. So when you see all of those signs, know that people have a lot of money. So you're going to see a lot of signs from a lot of people. If y'all see a lot of signs from me, that means y'all helped me out to get them. And you can take a pride in knowing that you put a candidate out there that represents you, because I will represent you. This is not about me. This is not a stepping stone. This is not something that I'm used to getting to the next thing. I am running to represent you. I don't want to talk too much about that anymore, though. But thank y'all so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to serving you in the State House District 97. Make sure May 17th, you are there to vote. And make sure you go to the website, www.rajonforsc.com, and donate. My name is Rajon Lewis, and I pray that I've said something that impacts your heart. Y'all have a great night. God bless you. Peace. I should put music on or something.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Campaign Conversations with Rajon Lewis. Please share this podcast with your friends. Rajon is running in South Carolina House of Representatives in District 97. Please follow on social media at Rajon for SC. Email the campaign RajonLewis4SC@gmail.com. Visit the website RajonForSC.com and make a donation today. We hope you enjoy these episodes as you follow along the campaign trail. Thank you.
Ha!